This is the Knowledge Bandits Podcast. I'm your host, Arum. I'd like to thank you for joining us today. Let's start the show. This is the Knowledge Bandits Podcast, and I'm excited to bring you today's guest, Mr. Zubair Abubakar. Zubair is a tech entrepreneur, a TED Fellow, an Aspen Action Forum participant, a two-time Future Award nominee, and a member of the exclusive 100 Guardian of the Future group conferred by President Goodluck Jonathan. Zubair is also the co-founder of ChopUp, a mobile social gaming company building locally relevant games for mobile Africa. Zubair, I've given a very, very brief introduction, but I was hoping you could take time and let the bandits get to know you a little bit better.
Arum, I think you've actually touched on pretty much the critical part of myself as an individual. I think pretty much what you probably haven't mentioned is the fact that, you know, as an entrepreneur, I always just seek out for opportunities to use technology to create an impact in the world and also, you know, create wealth. So as an example, I think you probably didn't mention the Constitution Project. So back in 2011, I started a pet project around making the Constitution readily available to everyday Nigerians, which today is now called the Constitution for All Project. And so far, so essentially at the time we built an app that has the Constitution in it, so people could, you know, easily just pop up their phone, launch the Constitution app, and just read the Constitution off of their mobile phones. And to date, we've been able to garner well over 1 million downloads for that.
Wow.
Yeah. So in our own little way, we've kind of been able to put the Constitution in about over a million phones. Because what you find before now is that the Constitution is like locked up. Well, not locked up, but like somewhere, you know, hidden or like not in the hands of everyday Nigerians. So like if you have to get it, you either have to go to the court or go to a library somewhere, you know. But with this initiative, so it's readily available. You can just download it from Google Play Store or BlackBerry Store, depending on the kind of device that you have. So that's also one interesting social project which we're working on alongside the gaming that you mentioned as well.
I think that's really interesting. So with the Constitution Project, what exactly was your background that allowed you to accomplish that project? Because I did read about it. I thought it was really cool that someone was doing that, getting people informed a little bit more and having it more accessible to people. So can you talk a little bit about that?
You're absolutely right. You know, an interesting thing is that people actually also ask that same question and wonder if I have a background in law or some human rights, if I'm some human rights activist, you know. And the truth is, actually, I'm not. I have a background in computer science. And for me, why I actually did that was, I think it was out of, you know, passion at the time. You know, I was curious and I just wanted to learn about the laws of my country. And I remember at the time I bought the hard copy of the Constitution. And I read it a few times, you know, and you know, the thought just occurred to me that, wait, listen, a lot of people, you know, don't even know that this thing exists, right? Wouldn't it be interesting if one can have it as a form of an application and made it available to every Nigerian, you know? And for me, I thought that thinking process in itself was quite inspiring for me, and I thought, okay, you know, I have the technical know-how, you know, so why not make it happen, you know? And I just started building and eventually launched it some months afterwards.
Interesting.
So for me, I think it's passion rather than background.
And so I think one thing that I find is it's hard for a lot of people to really hone in on what that passion is. So how are you able to find what you're passionate about and then also pursue it? Because there seems to be sometimes a disconnect with people.
So for me, right from the get-go, as soon as I was able to learn programming, right, even before I got into university, what I'd always looked out for was how to use the skills that I had to solve problems, right? So I derived passion from just realizing or just learning that, you know, whatever I'm working on would at the end of the day, you know, lead to some sort of impact or would make lives better for people, right? So that in itself gives me joy, you know. And I like I said, way back while even in uni, for instance, I'd worked on a project for my university. It's like a patient management solution, right? I remember back then I'd visit the school nurse every once in a while, and she would always mention that it's always, you know, problematic looking for student patient files, you know, to be able to look at, you know, past history and things that they complained about the last time they visited her and all that. And, you know, and I said, okay, listen, if this is a problem to you, it's actually not that complicated. I actually build, you know, a web application for you where all you have to do is enter the patient's name and it will automatically pull out all the, you know, medical records and every time that visited you, so you didn't have to be like looking for files and, you know, spending like 30 minutes looking for files before you actually see the patient. Yeah. You know, and she liked it, and I built that, and, you know, and I used it for quite a while, and, you know, and that was quite amazing because it helped change her life entirely, because, you know, she didn't have to waste time looking for files and all that. So for me, you know, while going through that process, all that kept me going was that you know, I kind of like picture her as a user, how happy she would be whenever she had to use that application that I built. And that gives me, you know, that gives me the boost. It could work different for any other person. The motivation could be money, for instance. Like, you could think about it, that how much would I possibly generate from the solution that I'm working on? And from there, you derive your passion. I mean, for everyone, it's different, right? I mean, obviously, not to say that I don't like money, right? But, you know, or let's think about, you know, what's the joy the user would derive from a solution I'm building.
Yeah.
And if it's interesting enough for me, I derive passion from it.
Oh, that's great.
I don't know if that.
Oh, no, definitely. That puts a lot of things into perspective. So just a few questions I have is, you said you started to learn programming before you even entered university. So at what age did you develop this interest in computer programming? And also, what's your background? Where'd you go to university?
All right. So, I think for me, I got introduced to computer programming, I think about the age of 15, 16, thereabout, just when I was, you know, still in my secondary school days. And while in secondary school, it was just, you know, basic introduction, how to use a computer to write letters and stuff. And then, interestingly, the guy that taught me liked programming, so I think he did a brief course in Q Basic, and for me it just was mind-blowing that you could, you know, write a bunch of codes on a computer and you could get it to do something for you. So for me, since then I picked interest, and then after uni I went on to do one of those like intermediary courses that you do before you get into university, in programming as well. And that was amazing for me because it exposed me to, you know, a whole lot of things, even the hardware as well. I got a bit geeky into a point where I used to assemble computers and stuff. So I'll just buy parts and assemble computers, and that was also interesting. Yeah. But in any case, I'd done that, and then I went to uni in, I don't know if you know, Ashesi University in Ghana.
Okay.
You know, it's actually one of the, I'd pride myself to say that, you know, it's actually one of the, what's the word that I can use now? In terms of leadership, in terms of entrepreneurship, I'd say, you know, the forward-thinking universities in Africa. Because of the model that they use and how their approach to learning and teaching students, I think it's unique in Africa. And I think, you know, come 5-10 years from now, it'll probably be the best university in Africa.
Wow. And it's a fairly new university, right?
Well, yeah, relatively new. It's been around for over 10 years, a little over 10 years. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And I, if I'm remembering correctly, I feel like I've read about a few other startups that started from there. There's one Ghanaian startup that went on to get funding in Silicon Valley and is now sort of a globally operating startup. The name escapes me right now, but yeah. No, that's...
Yeah, I mean, it's actually quite possible. There's a lot of the alumni is actually doing great. They're doing great things now. You know, there's a lady, Regina, she's called now. She runs she now runs an NGO for kids, for girls actually, to learn how to code. And you know, yeah, she was, I think that's last year, a year ago, she was one of those Yali fellows in America. And you know, she's gone on to do other things as well. So yeah, a bunch of other successful guys as well, and a lot of them actually also looking into entrepreneurship as opposed to nine to five.
Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, did you ever have that 9-to-5 job, or has entrepreneurship always been the thing that you've wanted to pursue?
Oh, no, absolutely. I've always had 9-to-5. I mean, I did 9-to-5 a couple of times. But the interesting thing is that it's almost as if it's like, what's it called? Like, you know, it's like how you're destined to do something, and you know how you try it for a bit, it doesn't work out because of the fact that it's part of your destiny. Somehow you just find a way of getting back to it. So yeah, after uni, I worked for an information portal called Connect Nigeria. ConnectNigeria.com is actually one of the biggest portals in Nigeria. You know, I was the lead developer at the time, helping them build the site, the portal actually. From scratch, and you know, and I did that for about a year and a half or some months thereabouts, and you know, and then I wanted to give entrepreneurship a try again, so I left, and then I went on to do interesting. Yeah, by the time I was leaving, there was an incubation program coming up called the Institute for Venture Design. It was actually in partnership with Stanford University. And we're looking for high impact entrepreneurs or people with the potential to build high impact businesses. And you know, I just applied and I got selected as well alongside my current partner. This is actually where I met my partner. And you know, we decided to come together to form Pledge 51 that currently owns ChopUp, which is the gaming arm, which is essentially what we're working on at the time. So that's kind of like the, you know, my story in a nutshell.
Yeah. Oh, that's very interesting. So, yeah, we're going to move in a little bit and talk about what you're working on now. You said Pledge 51 and then ChopUp. Can you talk a little bit about how you came about starting Pledge 51 and how that's sort of housing ChopUp right now?
Pledge 51 was actually started by myself and my business partner, Bio.com. And we met at the Institute for Venture Design, the same incubator I was telling you about that I applied for at the time. That was back in 2011, sorry. And so it's supposed to be like a two-year fellowship where there was like a 6-month residential where you have to be on campus. And then we had lecturers from Stanford Institute, Center for Design Research, I think, CDR, yeah. And they came by to do, you know, to take lectures and trainings on the whole curriculum on entrepreneurship, how to start up a business, how to find a business, you know, like the marketing research part, prototyping, going to market, and the whole thing. And then at the end, actually before the 6 months runs out, you're supposed to have selected your partner, or form a team and come up with, you know, an idea that you want. And then along during that period, you're supposed to have built a prototype, so to speak, that you would go to market with. You know, so at the time I met Bio, and both of us, Bio interestingly actually built a game called Danfo. So Danfo, it's like those yellow buses with black stripes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the pictures are everywhere. If you ever see a picture of busy Lagos City, you can't miss it. There are those yellow buses with black stripes.
Yeah.
So he did that about 2 or 3 years way before we met. And you know, that was actually quite interesting for a game done at that time. You know, so he had done something in mobile, and then at the time I'd done Nigerian Constitution as well. So relatively, we had done something, you know, relatively successful on mobile. We just decided to come together and, you know, form a mobile company. So that's how we formed Pledge 51. And interestingly, because of the game part, we decided to, you know, explore gaming, and we realized that, you know, it's got a huge potential. And so we decided to just zoom in on gaming and focus. So we built, so we started like a subsidiary called ChopUp. So that answers your question about ChopUp. So ChopUp essentially is a subsidiary of Pledge 51.
Okay.
We focus on, you know, mobile gaming and the works.
Okay. And there's this... go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, so fast forward now, 2016, we have about 25 games. And our games are built with African teams. So we try to infuse, you know, what everyday Nigerian or African would experience on a daily basis and try to infuse that into games. For example, we have a game called Sambisa Sauce, for instance, right, which is like a game around terrorism. You know, it's a simple whack-a-mole type of game where, you know, you have terrorists popping off from the rocks and you have to hit them before they shoot you, right? You know, or we have an Okada Rider game, which is also a play on, it's like an everyday life of an Okada Rider, for instance, in Lagos. You know, so things like that. So it's like, you know, you give people the entertainment value and then you also add that, you know, local appeal to it, so to speak.
Interesting. And so I'm just wondering, I'm sure you guys sit at a table and try to think of new games to come up with. So how, what is the process like from idea to actually building the game?
I mean, like I said earlier, we try to look at what's going on around us, and then that inspires the idea for the story for the game, right? So for another example of a game we've done, it's called Ebola Strike Force, right? Which is around, you know, the Ebola virus.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that came about, you know, because at the time when Ebola was prevalent and, you know, was pretty much, you know, everywhere, or at least in Nigeria at the time. And we thought, okay, listen, we could actually use this opportunity to teach people about the virus while, you know, they're being entertained playing our games. So we thought about, so how best do we deliver this, you know? And then we started thinking about, you know, how so the story for that is actually that, you know, some Nigerian scientists have discovered that they could extract serum from an Ebola infected from Ebola. But for us to do that, you have to inject the patient with a nanobot, right? So what now happens is that within the game itself, the player becomes a driver of the nanobots and tries to dodge viruses that come and attack, that come his way. And then he does that until he's able to get to the serum and extract the serum. And then there are other stages whereby the serum is now made into a vaccine that would now have to be injected into infected patient. Then the player then has to go as the same nanobot again into another body. But then you keep doing that until, you know, you finish the game. So we have that. We have the story ready. We get that to our graphic designers. They start to sketch out, you know, the graphics, the gameplay, the UI, you know, and then we hand that over to our animators that tries to animate, you know, the characters, bring them to life, and then the game developer picks it up, writes the codes that make everything come together, and then we have a game.
Wow. That's really fascinating to me, and I think a lot of the bandits will find it exciting. I just have a fascination with the processes of pretty much what people do. I think it's quite interesting. So do you guys have sort of an open policy where anyone within the organization can feed ideas to you, or how exactly is that that balance?
Yeah, definitely, absolutely, open door policy. Anyone pretty much, you know, with an idea can come forward and present it, and you know, we look at it if it's worth doing, and you know, we'll move forward with it.
I think that's really good, because also what I'm getting from you is that you guys have this sort of social impact, and I guess that's where the social and mobile social comes in, is that you guys are doing well and doing good. We see that's sort of a common theme with a lot of businesses these days, is they understand that they can be profitable, but they also understand that being profitable doesn't get in the way of doing social good. So it's good to see you guys are on your way to doing that. And
yeah, absolutely.
So for Pledge 51 and also for Chop Up, did you guys ever raise money, and how, if you did, how was that process?
It was actually, yes, we did. We raised raised money at the time, actually in 2014, and it was actually quite tough, as you would imagine. You know, obviously, think about how a lot of startups are springing up in America, for instance, and like everyone wants funding, you know, and obviously limited resources. Now think about how that would be in Nigeria, where a lot of the investors, especially the angel investors, still don't get it yet. For them, as it is right now, they rather invest in real estate, you know, so like I can buy a piece of land, for instance, you know, and then maybe over the next 3 to 4 or 5 years, probably would increase by, I don't know, 50 or 100%, for instance. And I know that that's an investment I can see, right?
Yeah.
As opposed to investing to maybe an internet startup where, you know, it'll probably take you about 6 months to a year to maybe even develop a product.
Yeah.
Maybe another 6 months to get the right market fit and, you know, try to get your product out there and get people to actually even buy it. You know, so like it's still kind of like it's not clear yet for them. So raising funds for startup in Nigeria, it's quite tough, you know. But it's changing. I mean, back when we got investments, definitely, I'd say this year will probably be a lot easier than it was then, you know, because people are beginning to, other foreign investors are beginning to come into the space. So, and then we also have a lot more incubators, right, and accelerators also in the space now that are looking for startups to grow. So it's definitely changing. But at the time, like I said earlier, it was tough for us, because like we had to do a number of pitches. We had to attend a number of competitions, pitch competitions, startup competitions, to get attention of investors, until we eventually, you know, found some that were interested. And even at that year, like you have to like keep up updating them for some time before they eventually decide that, okay, you know what, I think I like what you guys are doing, and I'd want to, you know, put a skin in the game, so to speak.
And I like what you're saying. I just drew out three things from that. You said you had to go to a lot of pitches, you did a lot of competitions, and the networking / relationship building, because I always like to emphasize that networking, people have this idea of networking that it's just sort of meeting someone and then signing a deal. But with networking, it's an ongoing relationship where both parties are able to see the value that each one brings to the table.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. And also, with to go along with that, how do you know the amount of your business that you should give up?
How do you know?
Yeah,
I think it really just stems. So that's actually a very tricky, you know, bit. But it really just stems from how much. I think first of all, what you need to understand is, or what you need to figure out is, how much do you need to start with, right? Because what you need. And by that I mean, how much do you need to take you to the next level? And so by next level, depending on what stage you're in your business. So first of all, if you're like at the early stages, for instance, and you need to even build a prototype to make, or maybe not even a prototype, to do like a proof of concept, right? So like, for you, it would now be a question of how much do I need to build that prototype and get the product out there to even show, or maybe not even get a product out there, but at least to show that, you know, this product, I can build this product. Mm. Right. So, so you might want to raise funding for just that bit to prove that, you know, to prove the concept. So what you then need to do is figure out how much of the money that you need, and then find an investor that can give you that money. But then, so how much of a company, to answer your question, how much of a company that you give out really will not depend on an agreed valuation between you and the investor. And in most cases, it's a question of how badly do you need that money. Because what you find is that it's now, you know, it now goes to this whole negotiation part, you know, because at the end of the day, you might say, you know what, my company is worth, I don't know, so and so X, and then investor says, listen, this is probably from your own perspective, but in reality, this is not what your company is worth, right? So it really boils down to negotiation. But again, like I tell people, is that I'd rather own, you know, what's it called, a 1% of a successful company than own 100% of a dying or a dead company. Do you get my point?
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, if you really need that money to survive or to get your company to where it needs to go to, there's no point holding on too much to ownership of the company, or maybe not even ownership, but at least owning on too much to, you know, shares or stocks of your company. Because at the end of the day, you know, you need to do what you need to do, you know, to move on.
Yeah. And I like this idea. The first thing you mentioned is that, well, you first need to figure out what you need the money for. You need to figure out how much it's going to take you to get to the next stage. And I think that's really important.
And I said that because some may make the mistake of, you know, trying to raise too much, you know. Like, I mean, if you're in the seed level, raise the money for seed. Don't try and raise for like a Series A. So essentially what I'm saying is that if all you need is like maybe $100,000, for instance, to get you to build that product that you need, raise that. Don't try and raise $1 million thinking that, you know, let me do all that now so that I don't have to raise later. You get it? Because by the time you raise that $1 million, you start to think of all sort of things that you shouldn't be thinking about. You know, and you find out that you eventually just waste that money. And in any case, that will even be a lot more difficult to raise than $100,000.
Yeah.
Sorry to cut you.
Oh, no. No, I mean, that what you just said sparked a question in my mind. So you talk about how you need to progress incrementally. So you said raise for a seed round when you're going through your seed stage. So how are you able to break it down into those steps? Because as an entrepreneur, I'm sure you're thinking about all of the ideas, all of these grand things that you can do. How do you break it down into actionable steps?
Okay, so like I said, first of all, you need to be able to identify, it depends on what stage you're in your business, but obviously starting from the ground up, so like you have an idea that you want to build, for instance. So if you're in that idea stage, I'd suggest that you don't really need investment. Why? Because as an idea, unless you need to maybe spend on, I don't know, maybe market research and whatnot, but you know, you can always reduce your research scope to, you know, a particular niche that you think needs your product. So that way you don't have to spend so much. So essentially what I'm saying is that as an idea stage, build that idea up to what you think you need. Build that idea up to what you think will be ready to be built into a product, right? So maybe where you might need immediate funding might be like that product development stage where, okay, it's either you're a developer or you're not a developer, rather, and you need to pay a developer to do that product, to build that product for you, or pay developers to build that product for you. So at that stage, try to identify the minimum viable product. That's the right word I've been looking for, minimum viable product, which by that, what that means is that what is that feature within your product that is the core of what you want to build, right? Mm-hmm. Take for instance, I want to build a food delivery service. So my minimum viable product will be that I just want people to go to a website, for instance, fill a form as about what they want to eat. If they have preference for a store or a restaurant that they want to eat from, for instance, and then maybe just make payment and then they get the product delivered. And that's like the core of it, that's what you should do. Other services could be, you know, maybe, I don't know, extra pickup service or some other things that could just be sweet and nice to have that are not necessarily important. But so essentially, once you're able to identify your minimum viable product, try to raise money to build that viable, build that MVP.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're good to go. So at every point in time, always try to identify your minimum viable product. That would help you in terms of knowing exactly, you know, what to build for. And then once you're done with that, and then you start to go to the next step, which is you test it out and see, okay, now I have a product, I have to go into the market, I need to test it out, right? So you, depending on where it is, you know, you look at the right channel to take it out or to publish it. If it's an app, for instance, like look for the right channel to publish your app through, and then you start thinking of marketing and whatnot. But I'll suggest, you know, breaking things down so it becomes easier to monitor and track.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of really good advice. And one thing I would add is don't feel like you have to do it alone. If you don't have the answers, go to someone who's already been through the process that can help you out.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so now we're going to switch gears a little bit. We've talked a little bit about the business itself, but we want to get to know you as an entrepreneur. So what fires you up in the morning? What's your morning routine and why is that routine so important to you?
So for me, it's really just, again, like I said, remember I said earlier on about, you know, how for me it's making the user happy, right?
Mm.
And making a difference in the user's life. So for me, it's more about when I wake up, it's more about, okay, so what's the next milestone that we need to achieve in a business, right? And I started to think about, okay, so what do we need to do to get there to the next level? And, you know, and you follow through with that for the rest of the day or the rest of the week.
Nice, nice.
Yeah.
And do you have specific things that you have to do, like when you wake up in the morning?
Oh, right. Well, so I've kind of become a bit lazy, but before in the morning, I used to jog and work out. That gives me extra energy I need for the day.
Mm-hmm.
So now that fasting is over, I think I'm going to continue that with that regimen as well.
Mm-hmm.
Then I think reading is also good, you know, just reading and reading widely as well. I think that's very, very important. That also sometimes gives you ideas as to things you want to do as an entrepreneur, or even just how to become a better person as an individual.
I like that. And then sort of as an entrepreneur, passion is a big part of it. And I know initially we talked and you said you're passionate about X, you're passionate about Y. But that's only one part of being an entrepreneur. The other part is actually being able to generate revenue. So can you name a few ways that you bring in income for yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. So we do bespoke projects for organizations. So for example, we did a project for Dofield. They're the makers of Indomie noodles. I don't know if you know. Obviously, mm-hmm. you have to know Indomie.
Yeah.
The next four.
Of course.
So so they came up with this cool characters called Indomitables. Mm-hmm. They're supposed to be like superheroes. Made out of, I don't know, like Nigerian school kids, right? Mm-hmm. And so at the time, they wanted us to build different games based on this superhero.
Oh, cool.
So, you know, we did that and we delivered for them. That's just one example of, you know, so we actually, besides our own in-house products and games, we also, you know, build bespoke, you know, apps and games for companies as well.
Okay.
So that generates revenue, additional revenue for us. Mm. We've also started subscription-based gaming, which essentially lets people pay like a token, like 20 Naira or 50 Naira, for instance, 50 Naira weekly, and then they get access to all of our games.
Mm. Oh, that's really interesting.
And so, yeah, so we're doing that in partnership with some of the, you know, telco companies in Nigeria. So we have our games. Etisalat, for instance, has a game store called Niger Games, which we have our games on as well. Mm. There's MTN as well, which is Game Plus, which is called Game Plus. We have our games on there as well. And we're also trying to sign as many publishing deals as possible, even outside of Nigeria, to get our games out of the country as well, so that at least we can also share in this, you know, storytelling in games as well, so at least people can also see Nigeria, see Africa through games as well.
Mm. And I mean, yeah. If you don't mind me asking, how do your games generate income for you?
Yeah, so I just mentioned subscription-based gaming.
Okay.
It's
okay.
A typical, right? So people pay 20 Naira daily, mm-hmm. or 15 Naira weekly, you know, and then they get access to the game. But in terms of actual how it works, so people use the credit, the airtime on their phone.
Yeah.
Right? So it's like when you download the game, you see a prompt that tells you this game is available on subscription basis. And ask you to select if you want to, you know, get access, if you want to get a 24-hour access, or you want to get weekly access or monthly access, right? So depending on whatever you choose, you automatically deduct that value from your airtime. So if you choose 15 hour, for instance, 15 hour gets deducted from your airtime, and then that gives you access for a week. So you can play that that game and every other game with a portfolio for that week.
Okay. Oh, wow.
So that money is the telco, and then eventually we collect the money from the telco.
Okay, and is it sort of difficult to collect that money, or you've already had an arrangement with the company ahead of time, so it's a bit of a smooth process?
Well, I mean, so it's a general, it's like their general policy. They don't pay you out immediately. So like, I think it's like quarterly payments, really. So they pay you, they accumulate it, they pay you, you know, on a quarterly basis.
Okay.
Essentially how it works.
Ah, interesting. Okay. And so being an entrepreneur, you have ups, you have downs, but I want you to take us to one of those moments as an entrepreneur where you just were not sure if you could continue. It was your sort of darkest moment. Can you take us and let us feel that with you?
Yeah, absolutely. For me at the time, actually my second startup, I got to a point where I think for me at the time, one of the lessons I also learned was that try as much as possible not to do too much, because you get burnt easily, right? Mm. At the time, we were trying to do too much, right? So we built this company where we just wanted to provide all-round IT solutions, right? So from, you know, hardware, networking, you know, building that, you know, computer network for a particular business that they want, or to trainings, to web design, you know, to, you know, software development. Like, we're just like a whole IT outfit, so to speak. Yeah. But, you know, and we just realized that at some point, you know, you can't possibly start out trying to do all that. So for me, I got to a point where it just wasn't working, and the painful, the hard part was that I had to actually tell myself the truth and, like, listen, man, if this is not working, there's no point trying to, you know, force yourself to do it, so to speak, right? So, like, you have to just come to that realization that, listen, you've beaten too much that you can chew. Mm. So you either, you know, reduce your all the things that you wanted to do and focus on one thing, or you just stop and start afresh, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, at the time for me, I just had to stop and start and start afresh. So I think also it's important to not try to do too many things Well, at least that's a lesson I learned from that adventure, not to try and do too many things at a time.
Hmm.
You know, and you mentioned passion earlier. For me, I started with passion. Like, I was so passionate and I wanted to do so many things at the same time. You know, it got to a point where, you know, like, passion kind of dies down because, you know, you are not, it's not what you thought it was. From the get-go, and then you just realize that maybe, you know, again, like I said, you probably just, I've probably bitten more than I could chew at the time. So yeah, those were, I remember, in fact, just talking about, you know, I remember, you know, the pain of just having to let go of, you know, all the things you had hoped you'd have achieved. You know, faced reality and say to yourself, man, listen, this thing is not working and you just need to move on with your life, so to speak.
I mean, I can imagine how frustrating that is, because you often hear entrepreneurs describe their companies as their babies, and to let go of something that you look at as your baby can't be easy at all. Well, I mean, on the other side now, we're going to talk about one of the greatest moments that you've experienced, one moment where it put everything in perspective, it made all of the struggle worth it. Can you take us to, I'm sure there have been many of those instances, but can you take us to one in particular?
Yeah, I mean, for me, for instance, like you said, I mean, there have been several of those moments, but I think one that I remember would be, you know, after going through the process of building that the Constitution project at the time, the Constitution app at the time, and thinking whether or not it would be, people would even download it, right? Only to find out after releasing it that people actually wanted it, and you know, and the download numbers were just, you know, flying through the roof at the time. You know, I remember 2011. There weren't that many, if there were at all, many Nigerian local applications available. You know, seeing that people were interested in it, I just downloaded and kept on downloading. You know, I remember at some point, you know, at work, like, everyone just had to, like, stop and just had to, like, refresh, and you just see that the download numbers were increasing upon every page. Was actually quite, you know, was actually quite interesting. That's probably one of the moments.
And what sort of insight did you gain from that period in time, insight on the Nigerian market?
Yeah, if anything, people would subscribe to what's important to them. People would subscribe to what benefits them one way or the other. So if you're trying to come into the Nigerian market, obviously make sure you're coming with something that it's either of value to them, or something that is of value to them, and something that it's more or less like a necessity, right? So that you don't have to spend a lot on, you know, either marketing or educating people that you actually need this service.
That's interesting. And for me, I remember around the time I'd been reading a lot about tech news in Nigeria. And one of the things that opened my eyes was, wow, I didn't know this many people had the capacity to download apps already. So it sort of opened my eyes to a completely new market, one that I didn't understand before, saying, okay, wow, so there's a critical mass of people wanting applications in Nigeria.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And now we're going to head into the rapid fire round. Are you ready?
Okay. All right, cool.
All right. So what would you say was initially stopping you from taking the step to become an entrepreneur?
I wouldn't say that's, for me, I don't even know if there was anything particularly, because I was actually really just interested in being, you know, being an entrepreneur. I mean, I probably didn't share this earlier on, but like my very first venture, which wasn't even anything that has to do with IT, was just, you know, the usual buying and selling, was way back in secondary school. So I'm one of those people that, you know, I'm an optimist, and I just believe that, you know, whatever I go into somehow would be successful. You know? Later in my life, I realized that at some point I was being naive. But then again, optimism is good, no matter how naive you are. So I wouldn't say particularly, but then again, like after being burnt out several times, I had a couple of things. So maybe thinking back again, yeah, there might be a couple of things. So after being burnt, I'd made a decision that, listen, I wouldn't go into entrepreneurship again because I just thought it was tough. And I think one of holding me back then was that I was just a techie. I didn't have that business acumen. So I felt, okay, maybe I need to go to a business school to start another venture. And then for some of the things I needed to do also, I felt okay, I needed funding as well. So funding was also another issue. And then also having a partnership. So I was like, okay, you know what? I needed these things to be sure that before I go on to start another business. And interestingly, that was when I came across this incubator I told you about earlier on. So they were providing me all those things. And that essentially made me decide, okay, you know what, maybe I should give this another shot. So going back to your questions, those three things would be having that business acumen to start business, the funding required to start the business, and also having the right partner.
Good. And what quality do you think most contributes to your success as an entrepreneur?
Persistence. I think that's probably one of the most important qualities you can ever have as an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Because, man, some of this just don't happen immediately. It just don't happen in months. Some take years.
Yeah.
You know, and if somebody had told me starting out, I probably would have, you know, realized. Because a lot of people, you know, you go into it and you just think, because, you know, you're very optimistic, you know, you're passionate, you're happy, you know, and you can't wait to just get to that point where, you know, you're like this successful entrepreneur. But what you don't realize is that this is actually take time. Like, you don't, there's no such thing as, you know, overnight, let me borrow from the celebrity word, overnight celebrity or overnight, you know, successful entrepreneur. You have to actually work. Like, you have to grind and grind and grind and grind until you become successful. And for you to keep doing that, you have to have that perseverance and you have to persist. Otherwise, man, you know, you hit a roadblock, just give up.
Yeah. I really like what you're saying there. Sometimes people ask me what it's like trying to start your own thing. It must be exciting. And I say, yeah, overall, the concept is exciting. But being an entrepreneur, there are a million and one things in between that are really not fun to do, but you understand the necessity in doing it. So it's that persistence to continue doing those little things that don't seem to matter, but matter immensely. Yeah. And what quality could you improve on most as an entrepreneur?
Well, yeah, as an entrepreneur, I'd say to continue to evolve, right? So by that, I mean, I try to learn new things, try to learn, especially about what you're, maybe not even specifically about your market or about what you're doing, but just generally, because it just helps you grow as a person, as an individual. Because if you don't, then, you know, like, you're stuck in old ways. And obviously, you know, with technology, you know, things change, you know, in the snap of the finger.
Yeah.
You know, so you have to keep up. Otherwise, you know, you'll be overtaken and crushed, so to speak. So I think one thing, you know, every entrepreneur needs to strive to improve on.
And what advice would you give to a younger Zubair just starting his career in entrepreneurship?
Okay. Younger me. I'd say spend a lot of time in learning other skills. right? I think while I was too geeky and I just wanted to learn how to code, and I was just wanted to build, you know, build software, build applications, and that was just it. So I told a younger self to be more liberal and learn a whole lot more things. You know, just be very open-minded and try to learn as much as possible beyond the geeky self, so to speak.
And what is one internet resource or application that you couldn't live without? And let's take out ChopUp, Pledge, the Constitution app, Facebook, or any of those major ones. What's one of those hidden gems?
My browser, obviously, because that links me to the internet. So one way or the other, I have to open my browser so many times in a day.
We want to dig a little deeper, though. Like, what is one thing that, I mean, it could be a game, it could be a productivity tool or something like that.
Oh, okay. Actually, I'll take that back. Definitely the phone app on my phone. Obviously, because I have to call people. The email app, of course, because I use that a lot to send emails, receive emails, send emails as well. Then, what else? Then I use my map app, you know, when I'm driving, I don't know where I'm going, so I use the map app to get around. My banking app also quite important for me to, you know, transfer money and, you know, just check my accounts and follow up with that. Unfortunately, you said I can't mention ChopUp, but yeah, of course, but yeah.
Yeah.
Again, but yeah.
Okay.
What else? Yeah, and then, of course, the Constitution app. You know, every once in a while, I pop it, you know, just to check. Especially when I'm reading the news and I hear the senators talking about a particular section of the Constitution, you know, so I just go there, you know, open the app and just read about it and just kind of understand what they're talking about.
Interesting, yeah. And I mean, now I'm a little bit curious. So, do you play the games that you make? Because, you know, sometimes they say it's, once you make the food, it's not as sweet when you eat it. But do you enjoy playing your games?
Absolutely. Obviously, not all of them, you know, but like some that, you know, I'm like, nah. And, you know, because one of the things we've also done is that we've got like a leaderboard on pretty much all of our games. So what you find me doing most of the time is, if you launch one or two of our games, you see that I'm actually like the second or third on the leaderboard. So, you know, I fight very hard to keep the number one position. On, you know, all of our games. So that in itself tells you that I actually go there to play them.
Okay.
Because also one of the things we do is that we try to learn from the games as we, the games that we build as we go on. And so, and you can only learn by playing. And also playing also helps you correct certain things. So, you know, while building the games, you might not see certain bugs, but while playing it, over time, some bugs might just come up. Maybe not even bugs, improvement that you just realize, oh my God, what if we added this? You know, it will probably make a difference. Go back to it and improve on the game.
Interesting, yeah. And to close out the rapid fire round, do you feel like you've made it yet?
Absolutely not. I mean, it's always a continuous process. I mean, like, there's no, I think as an entrepreneur, the moment you say to yourself that I've made it, I think that automatically starts something in your head. So you become complacent, like you just feel like, you know, I've arrived, as they say here, and you become relaxed and whatnot. So I don't think we're there yet. I don't even think we're close. We're close enough yet. You know, there's still a long way to go.
I think that was a good rapid fire round. I got a lot from it. I'm sure people were picking all of those small gems that you were dropping throughout the entire thing. And as we cool down now, I want to ask, what book would you recommend to the bandits?
Right. So there's this book which I try to tell people to read. Malcolm Gladwell's Outliers. I think it's actually a very good book.
Yes.
It goes detail into how to be successful. And I think, you know, one major takeaway from there is that if you want to be successful, just do one thing for 10,000 hours.
Mm.
Right? Do it diligently for 10,000 hours, you'll be successful at it.
Mm.
So I think that's a very good tip for entrepreneurs. Well, obviously, there are a whole lot of other lessons in there.
Yeah.
So I'd recommend that, definitely recommend that to any entrepreneur to read. Mm. Startup Nation is another book, which is awesome for anyone that's trying to build a startup. It's about how Israel became the startup nation, essentially.
Mm.
And it's amazing how some of the things that they've actually done, the strategic decisions and programs that the government there has actually put in place to ensure that the startups in that country thrives. Mm. And what some of the startups have actually also done to become successful. So I think that's also a very good read for any startup. Mm. I think for me, those will be like my top two books.
Okay.
That I'd recommend.
Yeah, definitely. And for you, what would you say is the value of mentorship, and how can people sort of go about finding mentors?
I actually do have mentors, but like it's not like official, you know. Mm. It's, you know, hey, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, this is what I'm doing. And you're like, okay, why don't you try this? Why don't you try that? You know. Mm. And I think the same thing for, you know, official, you know, mentor to mentee kind of arrangements. I think it's actually quite important because at any point in your life when you're confused, your mentor is supposed to kind of like, you know, guide you, hold your hand and guide you along through the whole process of, starting a business or, you know, whatever issue you're having at the time. So I think it's actually quite important. And finding a mentor, which is your next question, I don't know if there's a, actually wait, there is a website. I can't remember what it's called now, but I think it was started by Ashish Tukar, which is like one of those rich South Africans. And I think the idea of it was really just to connect mentees to mentors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it structured programs to ensure that, you know, the mentor actually helps the mentee, and the mentee actually benefits from the whole program as well. So there are some of those programs that are available out there that, you know, people can easily just search on the internet and find out to be a part of as well.
Yeah. No, I think that's really good advice. You mentioned Myra Group. I think if people...
I was trying to remember.
Yeah. If people aren't able to find mentors in their proximity, you can go online. There are a lot of resources that will connect you with people. And also, they say you're the average of the five people you spend most time with. You can go onto YouTube, you can go all through the internet and read and hear these people, some of the greatest entrepreneurs like Steve Jobs or even like a Dangote, whatever the case is. You can listen to these people speak and you still gain a lot of insight from them that way.
Exactly.
Yeah. And what advice would you give to those bandits that are listening that are afraid to take that next step into entrepreneurship?
Just start, man. As in, not thinking, what's that, what's it called again? No pain, no gain, right? Just start, really. At the end of the day, you know, if you're trying to wait for the right moment, you just might miss it, you know? So just start. Even if you don't know, what to do, but at least just so long as you have an idea, walk towards it and just keep improving on it on a daily basis. But then again, you know, as you improve on it, try to seek help as well, you know, talk to people that have done it before. But the most important thing is starting and actually doing, right? You know, they say success is 1% aspiration, 99% perspiration, right? Mm-hmm. So essentially what that means is that you spend a lot of time doing than thinking and fantasizing, right? So mm-hmm. you spend 99% of your time actually doing what you want to do,
yeah.
right? So that's why I said just start, right? You know, because if you're afraid of losing money or whatnot, you know, you're probably going to lose the money anyway, so you might as well just start, right? And if mm-hmm. you're into rap, I don't know, one of those raps says something about scare money, don't make money, right? Yeah. I don't know if it's the right phrase, but you know, something along those lines, right? So
yeah,
at the end of the day, just start.
No, I think that's good advice. And I like that one liner that you said is no pain, no gain, because there is a lot of pain in trying to start your own business. We'll get that clear right away. As we sort of wrap up, we're about to say goodbye. For those bandits that have been listening, who have just been particularly inspired by your story and by the work that you're doing, how can they connect with you for mentorship opportunities or maybe even internship opportunities?
So, first of all, our website is chophop.me.
Mm.
So it's at chophup.me,
mm.
right? Our contact information is all there. On social media, for most of them, I think I'm at Zubair Abubakar. For Twitter, for instance, I'm at Zubair Abubakar.
Mm.
Facebook, I think it's / Z Abubakar, but the easiest way to get through to me would would be just on Twitter, for instance. Just do at Zubair Abubakar and get.
Okay, nice. And one question I wanted to ask before sort of slipped my mind is, what do you do for fun? How do you unwind from what your hectic schedule?
Yeah. Wow. Interestingly, before I used to be dancing. I used to like dancing a lot.
Hmm.
And actually football, soccer is also another big thing I used to do as well. So evenings and weekends, I play soccer a lot. Interestingly, people used to ask me, what's your favorite football, soccer club? And I say, I'd rather play than watch people, a bunch of rich guys, playing.
Okay.
So yeah.
Oh, nice, nice. As we say goodbye, we'll leave you with the final question. So you're tasked with building the greatest business the world has ever seen. You can bring on any two people, living or dead. With you taking the lead, who would you bring on, and what would you do?
Interesting question. Living or dead, two people definitely. Number one, I'll bring back from the dead. I'll definitely bring back Steve Jobs.
Mm.
I think his creativity and his craziness. Let me use that word. I think his craziness is quite unique, and I don't know if you can find that in that many people. He'll be probably number one at bring back and happily have on my team. I think the other person will be, I don't know why I keep thinking from the dead, because I'm probably just really inspired by them and kind of things they've been able to achieve their lifetime. So actually we'll be in between, maybe I can add a third, we'll be in between Mandela and Gandhi. And simply because they're the fact that they've been able to build a nation by pure compassion, love and understanding of humanity. I think those two are powerful people that I think I'd definitely love to have a team.
I think we'll give you that extra person. So there you have it. Steve Jobs, Nelson Mandela, Gandhi, and Zubair taking the lead with that team. Well, Zubair, thank you so much. It's been an amazing experience for me, and I'm sure the Bandits appreciate it as well.
Sure, you're most welcome. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
This is the Knowledge Bandits podcast. We want to thank you for joining us today. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Overcast, or Stitcher. You can also follow Knowledge Bandits on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. And as always, Bandits, stay inspired.